come in. There's some more seats over on this side in front of this screen. It's getting pretty full. Welcome, everybody. This is the second day. This is our Windows Azure .NET and all good things dev today. You're all ASP.NET developers, right? Yeah, awesome. I am Damien Edwards. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team. And a lot has happened in the last year in SignalR. Who saw our SignalR talk last year? With me and David. Awesome. And who has used it since then? You know, we released it since then. It went 1.0 earlier in the year. And 1.1, 1.1.1, and 1.1.2, and a few bugs. And we're now working on 2.0. And we'll talk a little bit about that at the end. But today is not a SignalR talk in the traditional sense. I've given a lot of SignalR talks in the last year, but I've really given the same talk about 35 times. Today, I'm going to give a very different talk. Hopefully one that answers, at least partly, almost the first question that nearly everybody asks after they see SignalR, which is, how does it scale? What is the performance like? How many clients can I connect? And I always answer, well, it depends. Because that's the truth. Because if you've ever done scale testing on web sites or web applications before, you know there is no easy answer. There isn't a magic formula that you can like pump numbers into and get an answer out the other side. It takes work. And so I will show you today a bunch of tools, a lot of theory, a lot of guidance. There'll be a lot of slides, not as much coding as I usually do, to give you some ideas about the approaches and the patterns that you can take to help scale your application when you're using SignalR, and also, you know, test your application, explore the limits of its performance, and to give you some tips and guidelines along the way. If you are looking for the introduction to SignalR talk, this is not it. Go up to www.asp.net/signalr, and there's some great getting started up information up there. There's some great links to videos that are about getting started with SignalR. I apologize if you're completely new to SignalR, but this is not the getting started talk. Okay. So, scaling traditional versus real-time web. So, when people ask me, how do I scale SignalR, I say, well, it's a lot like scaling a web application. You have to worry about the same sort of things. You have to worry about memory consumption. You have to worry about object lifetime. You have to worry about CPU usage, obviously. And network, bandwidth. How much bandwidth do you have being utilized coming up to your server and going out again? But there's also some other things that you have to worry about. Generating load is a little bit different with SignalR. SignalR is a server technology, certainly, but it's also a client technology. The clients in SignalR have SignalR knowledge. They have to be able to talk the SignalR protocol. So you can't just generate traffic to SignalR in the same way you may have done in the past, using, you know, whether it's WCAT or LoadBench or the Visual Studio Web load test tools, whatever it might be. We have other tools for developing load, which I'll talk about. So it is the same, but it's different. And we have those things to think about. In order to help us break down how we talk about SignalR scale, we'd like to talk about four canonical load patterns, types of applications, or the way that they use SignalR. And then we talk about the performance and scale characteristics of those four ways of using SignalR. Okay? Because in the web, it's pretty basic. It's like, well, how do websites work? You make a request, you do some processing, you get a response. The response is either cacheable or it isn't, right? And if it's cacheable, it has an amount of time it can be cacheable, and you can decide where you want it to be cacheable, and then you have ways of invalidating data that's in the cache. Well, with SignalR, obviously nothing's cacheable. Everything is real time. It's an active connection. And so there are some things that change. One of the big differences is in concurrency. This question of how many connections can my server or my application support at once? How many active users? How many idle users? How many concurrent users in general? With a web application, a standard one with request response, you could have 5,000 people actively using your application right now, but maybe there's only 500 requests going on right now. Right? Because they're looking in their browser, they're doing some, you know, filling in some data, or they're reading some a page, and of course there's nothing happening on the server corresponding to that action the user is taking. Well, that's all different in the real-time web. I have an active connection. There is a live network connection between the browser and the server as long as the signal or connection is up. And it takes resources on the server. You can't get away from that. There's a connection there. It's going to take memory. And so the characteristics of configuring your servers and doing load testing and looking at the type of metrics that you have to understand and look at the thresholds that you need to sort of watch for going over are a little bit different. And the difference between idle connections in SignalR and active connections in SignalR is also fairly different. It also depends on what transport the client is using. You know, we support 4 transports in SignalR. We have WebSockets, which is everyone's favorite, new and shiny. We have service end events, which is HTTP streaming to all browsers other than IE. We have forever frame, which is HTTP streaming to just IE. And then we have long polling, which is sort of, you know, poor man's HTTP streaming. It's like, hey, poll, wait, there's some data, return, process it, poll again, okay? And depending on which one of the transports your clients are using, you'll get different overheads. I can tell you that WebSockets has the lowest memory overhead on the server side, vastly, about 5 times less than using one of the streaming transports. Just because when we added WebSocket support in ASP.NET, we knew the connections were going to be long-living, right? I mean, that's what WebSockets is. So we did a lot of work specifically to reduce the memory overhead of using WebSockets. But the other transports, not so much. So some general things to watch out for. General things. Blocking calls. For example, doing blocking I.O. Now, we've heard a lot about async. We saw it in the keynote today. Who was it, Scott Hanselman's talk just before? Okay, I think he showed async, EF, Web API, that sort of stuff again. It's extremely important in SignalR that you never, ever block within the SignalR pipeline. And what does that mean? Well, if you're writing a hub method, you all know what a hub method is. This is the thing that SignalR clients call. It's like an action method in MVC. You never want that hub method to block. Because in WebSockets, for instance, while a hub method is being invoked, that socket is completely and utterly choked. Nothing else can happen on that socket while that call is taking place. So if you do something long running in your hub method or make a database call that maybe takes a while and blocks the thread, blocks that socket for the whole time, you're going to get responsiveness issues in the client and you're going to create concurrency issues because that's one less resource available to the server to service another request. So where possible, use 4.5, .NET 4.5, and async if you are calling into long-running APIs, especially I/O APIs. Sending large messages is something else to look out for. I get this question quite a bit. How big can I send really, really big messages on SignalR? Well, you can, but I thoroughly would not recommend it. Because of the way SignalR works, which we'll talk a little bit about in a moment, we do buffering on the server. We store messages into a cache, and then we send them to the client in order to get better throughput. But that means we're holding onto those messages on the server. So if you're sending very, very large messages, you're going to use more memory on your server. And you're sending a lot of them, you're going to use a lot of memory on your server. Now, we have limits in place. And so once you get to so many messages in the cache, we start recycling those slots. It's a ring buffer. But if you're sending large messages, you're going to use more memory. And frankly, SignalR is not the right mechanism over which to send very large messages. If you want to send images, don't send an image down the SignalR pipe. Send a link to the image down the SignalR pipe and then just let the browser get it as a standard request. Browsers are really good at doing that, okay? And you should probably have that image on an edge cache, static, cookie-less domain, and all the rest of it if you really care about the sort of level of performance. I will say at this point, if you have scale problems, that's a great problem to have. Don't be scared of a new technology because you think it might have scale implications off the bat. Having scale problems is a great problem to have. It means you have some level of success or you have really bad coders, one or the other. Hopefully it's the former. But this is, it's actually a really enjoyable part of development. I like this type of development. You have a really clear intent in mind. I want to make my app faster. I want to make it more responsive. I want to make it start up quicker. I want to make it use less memory so I can run more of them on the same server. And there are some great tools in place, and for a lot of developers at least, this is a fairly new area. Not a lot of people that I've interacted with anyway do a lot of this type of stuff. So hopefully you'll receive some stuff here today, which is kind of cool. So avoid sending large messages. Don't do video conferencing over SignalR. Memory leaks caused by misunderstanding the SignalR object lifetime. This is a huge one. We get a report every few weeks of someone saying, oh, there's a terrible leak in SignalR. I ran it in my production app for 5 minutes and got 300 connections, and then I ran out of memory. I'm like, well, I think we would have seen that by now if that was actually a problem in SignalR. And what it usually turns out to be is that the developer didn't understand how long some of the signaler objects live for. So the obvious one is the hub, like a controller. You create a controller in MVC, you create a hub in signaler. And you may make an assumption about how long that hub instance is alive. And you store state on that hub instance. Or perhaps when a hub method is invoked, you set some value somewhere else in the hub and then expect to be able to get to it again later on. Or you create some expensive object when people invoke the hub or in the connect event or something like that. So understanding the life cycle of or a lifetime of objects in Signaler is extremely important to make sure that you're not accidentally creating things a lot more often than you perhaps suspected. The biggest mistake people make is they go, oh, a hub instance must last as long as a connection. So when someone connects to my hub, they get a hub instance for them, and then I can use that to track data about them, and then it goes away when they disconnect. That is not how it works at all. Whenever you invoke a hub method from the client, you get a new hub instance. Hub instances are transient. It is an implementation detail how long the hub instance will last for. Okay? It's not like an object that's bound to the connection. So there is some good documentation about this now. That's another big thing that's changed in the last year. So now that we're a fully fledged product, we actually have some pretty good documentation in place. This is the hub server-side hub API guide up on ASP.NET/Signaler. And there is a section in here somewhere about, not that one. Let's go back. About lifetime. See if I can find it. Might be instance, actually. No, let's say transient. I'm just lying completely now. Transient. There we go. Hub object transient. So it talks about how long these hub objects live for. And as a result, if you know how long they live for, you can make the right decisions about what sort of data you put on them and what sort of objects you create when the methods on the hub are invoked. So very, very important that you understand these things to avoid things like bad memory leaks. Session. Who uses session in their ASP.NET applications? Come on, you can admit it. I know I'm saying here, don't ever use it. A lot of people use session, okay? It's been around for, 16 years? It was in ASP Classic. That's why it's in ASP.NET, to be brutally honest. It's in ASP Classic, so it's been there all the way, 15 years of continuity in the way session works in the Microsoft web development stack. Session isn't really great for long-running stuff. In fact, session isn't really supported for long-running stuff. It was never intended to be used from a long-running request, like a signaler request. It's really only intended to be used when you access the session very quickly and then perhaps write to it extremely quickly, and then the request goes away. Why? Because ASP.NET takes locks on session that have affinity to the request. So if a request comes in, the request is marked as needing session access. It takes a lock on the session for that user. So if another request for that user comes in, what happens to that request? Gets blocked. While the first one is processing some session, when that request has finished, then the session lock is released, and then the other request can get to the session. But there is a timeout. If the request runs too long, it's about 2 minutes, the session lock will just be released. We don't care where your code is, we'll just release the session lock because we don't want to jam up the server. So do not use session with long-running operations. We do not support it from Signaler at all. There is no API to use Signaler, to use session from Signaler. If you find a code sample on how to use session from Signaler, don't use it. Please, they are out there, I've seen them. Please don't use them. If you need to do per connection or per user state, there are a myriad of other options in web development available to you other than the session object. In Signaler, we have something called hub state. Hub state, if you don't know what that is, go up to the documentation, have a look. It's a way to round trip small amounts of information between the server and the client and keep them synchronized, okay? Just for the lifetime of a connection. It's kind of nice. Cookies, obviously, we've been using forever, up to 4K per cookie. Browser storage, some of the newer APIs, HTML5, browser storage, IndexedDB, or just use a good old database. If you have a database in your application and you're storing user data in your database, it's not unlikely that you'll have a place to store transient user data or session, like a shopping cart or something like that. If you're already going to read the database, why not just read out that session database data as well? So don't use session is the takeaway. OK, clicker. Remember the secret of scale. I'm stealing from Scott Hanselman. Everyone said this ever seen this before? Have your app do as little as possible. Because if you do nothing, you can scale infinitely. It's true. If you do nothing, you can do an awful lot of it. The less you do in your app, the more you can scale. I'm amazed, constantly amazed, at the amount of people who go, I'm having scale problems in my app. What do you do? Oh, all types of stuff. So, well, you know, if you're doing processing, someone has to pay for that somewhere. And at scale, the smallest issue in your code or in your architecture or in any pipeline or any module or call out that you might make, the smallest issue will be amplified at scale because the law of big numbers comes in. A really small number multiplied by a really big number is still a really big number. Okay? And so you have to be very, very careful when you're talking at scale. But as I said, if you have this problem, if you actually run a website or work on applications where you have thousands of concurrent users and thousands of concurrent requests, which isn't many, by the way, it really is not, then all power to you. Well done. Most applications, most ASP.NET applications will probably deal with double figures of requests per second. If it's a particularly popular website, like in the top 100, it may deal in hundreds, high hundreds, or low thousands of requests per second. And if you're in the top 10 in the world, probably not the top three, but you know the number seven, three through to seven, then you'll be dealing in sort of five figures requests per second. Okay, so something like Microsoft.com might be getting 35,000 requests per second. Okay. So when we see some numbers later on, when I run some tools, keep those sort of numbers in mind. If you think I'm wrong, if you have a website and you're saying, hey, we're getting 4 million requests per second, then all power to you. That's different data than I've seen. Okay, so understanding these load patterns. As I said, we kind of categorize signal or load into four distinct canonical examples of how you can use real time in your app. But before we do that, let's have a little sneak under the covers. This is a diagram that represents the internal logical structure of Signaler. These don't represent physical boxes. They don't represent servers or classes. This is a logical representation. So don't go looking for a class called Worker because it doesn't exist. There is a class called Broker, though, and it does look a lot like this. Okay, so it is basically pub-sub. Anyone ever used a pub-sub system? Okay, there are like literally hundreds of them on the market or open source. Signaler at its core is very simple. It's just pub-sub, okay? That's why we don't give you a collection of connections that you for each over to send to people, right? That's not how we work. You just say broadcast, and that publishes to a string, a signal, and the string will be the name of the connection, the endpoint. And everyone who is connected to that endpoint is subscribed to that signal. So when you publish to that signal, that one message, we replicate it out to all the clients who are subscribed, okay, pub-sub. So this is what it looks like. My clicker is not as good as I want. Here we go. So the bit in the middle we collectively call the message bus. You'll hear me use this term a lot. We have a cache that sits on the web server in memory, and then we have these purple boxes, these workers, which are just sort of, think of them as threads, okay? There are things that are running in process in the message bus in your app that do work of sending stuff to clients. So what happens is, the first thing that happens is when you call send or when you call broadcast, you pass an object on the server side. We serialize that message into JSON. That takes time. Okay? So there's your first hit. You send a big message, large object, large complex object graph, we have to serialize it. That takes time. It takes CPU cycles. Okay? So if you're doing a profile Signaler app, don't be surprised if you see double-digit amount of CPU time, like the hot path in your app, is spent in JSON.NET's serialization routines, okay? Because we have to serialize your message. And then we store it as bytes in the message cache, raw bytes, array segments of bytes, actually. So we save it to the cache, and we associate it with the signal that you sent it to. So you say, hey, okay, broadcast to everyone on the connection or the hub foo, that the signal would be called foo, and there'd be a bunch of bytes, okay? There is a thing called a topic, which is this structure, basically one of these workers. It's marked for delivery. We go, okay, there is a new message for topic foo, because I have a hub called foo. Schedule it for delivery. Mark it as ready for delivery. There is a message waiting. And then we return. So if you've called broadcast, you know it returns a task. That task represents the fact that when you get that method recall back, when you get the task back, the message has been saved into the cache, been serialized, saved to the cache, and that call is returned. It doesn't mean we've sent it to clients yet. That's what the task represents. Okay? So that's done. So now, okay, so we have a message in the cache. A worker at some point in the future is scheduled to start delivering that message to people who care about it. Now, there are only a finite amount of workers configured in an application in Signal by default. It is changeable, but by default, it's set to 3 per CPU. So you run on a 4 CPU server, we will create 12 basically background threads that do the work of actually pushing data out over real HTTP responses. Okay? So we have these 12 things sitting there, or 3. I have 1 CPU in this example, so I have 3 workers. It looks for a signal that has been marked as ready for delivery. That'll be foo. It takes the message, it selects a client that subscribes to foo. So it has a list of clients waiting for foo. It picks the first one. It grabs the message from the cache for that client, and then it actually does the job of sending those bytes down the wire, response.write, quite literally. Response.write, response.flush. And that all takes time. Again, if you have a big message, sending that message down the pipe to the browser on the other end of the planet takes time. That worker is going to be busy while that happens. Okay? Once that's finished, it can release its handle on that client, and it moves on to the next client. Oh, who else cared about foo? This person. Let me get the message again. Let me send it down to the client, bytes, flush it, wait for it to finish. Right, let me go back to the next client. And that just continues over and over and over forever. Okay? So understanding how this works will give you an appreciation for what happens. And so as I said, the third thing is we actually write it down to the client, and that takes time. Again, depending on the transport you use, that will take time too. For WebSockets, that's pretty quick. It's a binary channel, it's already established, we just pump it down. For HTTP streaming, it's also pretty quick. We already have the bytes, we serialize it up front. So we don't re-serialize it for every client, we just send raw bytes down to the client. But for long polling, we send a response, and then the response ends. And then we have to wait for the client to come back and reconnect, and they'll get some messages sometime in the future. Okay? So each one of these three steps takes time. It takes CPU, it takes memory, it takes network bandwidth. Understanding where these things happen will give you an appreciation for where the time is going in your app. Okay, so pattern number one, server broadcast. Very, very popular. First thing most people do. Low rate, as in a message every few seconds or one message a second, broadcasting the same payload to everybody. Just, I'm in a hub, connection.broadcast, blah. And I do it every 3 seconds. Fixed rate, okay? I create one message, I send it, and then that gets replicated to multiple users, just like we saw in that diagram. You get that fan out effect. So the number of messages actually going over the bus doesn't increase as you add more clients, because it's pub sub. I could have one client, and the bus, you send one message every second, you send one message a second through the bus. You have 100,000 clients, you're still only sending one message a second through the bus. You have to deliver that message to 100,000 people, but the workers do that. Okay? So the characteristics of the traffic is changing. Very popular for doing things like application-wide alerts and a simple stock ticker, like the sample one that you can download from NuGet. Okay, server two, pattern two, server push. Low rate broadcast again, but this time a unique payload to each client. A unique payload. One message bus send maps to one user. So I'm no longer getting that fan out effect. If I have 100 users I'm sending an update once every 3 seconds to everybody, that's 100 messages I have to send over the bus every 3 seconds. Okay, see the difference? Which means some of that work, serialization for example, I'm doing 100 times more serialization than I was in the previous example. And serialization is expensive. More clients means more messages. So the more clients I add to my app, the more messages I have to send, the more serialization has to be done. Okay? You have to keep that in mind. Unique stock watch list is a good example. So I go to a site, I say, I want to watch these 3 stocks. And you come to the site and you want to watch 3 different stocks. And now we have unique payloads. Okay? There are tricks you can do, sort of the interleave and figure out groups or something like that, but generally that's a good example. Or job monitoring. I'm monitoring my jobs and Frank is monitoring his jobs. Okay? We have different payloads. Pattern 3, user event driven. This is chat. Okay? People connect. People do stuff in the client, they raise events, and that causes messages to be sent. So the more things that people do, the more messages get sent. The more people there are, the more messages get sent. This is like number two, except that number two is fixed rate. You controlled the rate. In number three, the users control the rate. Think of Jabber, the chat application we showed last year, still running up in Azure. If more people connect to Jabber and chat, I get a lot more messages. And every single chat, it might be a broadcast, right? Because it's going to a room. I'm not sending it to every individual user. But as I add more users, I get more traffic. Okay? Document collaboration is another example of this. Okay? Everyone gets together. They work on one document. Pattern four, my favorite, high-frequency real-time. This is real-time gaming. So very high rate, fixed high rate, though. This is a key. It's a fixed high rate. You control the broadcast rate on the server. And we don't recommend you go any higher than 25 hertz, because why would you? If I'm sitting in Chrome or Internet Explorer on my phone, what am I possibly going to do with more than 25 updates a second when I'm looking at the screen? Right? Not a lot, not an awful lot. At 25 hertz, you can do 60 frames a second of animation with interpolation and prediction, all those nice gaming things that you can do, like shooter.signaler.net does. Okay, so 25 hertz, no more than that. One message bus send maps to one user. Again, no fan out. If I'm doing real-time gaming, I'm in a different place in the universe than you are, so I'm going to get different messages than you. So this is like the most extreme example. Everyone gets different messages, and I'm sending them a bazillion times a minute. Okay, a lot of load caused by this type of messaging. And the more clients you add, you get more traffic, obviously. Okay, so the summary. We've got number one, server broadcast, low rate, messages to all clients. This is most common. This is what people dip their toe in the water with. Number two, also very common, server push, low rate, but I'm pushing unique messages to everybody. Pattern three, user event driven. This is chat. I add more people, I get more messages. If people are feeling frisky and they do a lot of chatting, I get more messages. Okay, it's all up to the users. Pattern four, high frequency. I control the rate still, but it's much, much higher than it was before, 25 hertz. From server to client, up to 25 hertz. Okay, don't do more than that. Okay, so that's our load patterns summarized. Let's look at some things you can do to sort of see these things happening as they happen. So first thing to remember is SignalR is open source. So I'm up on GitHub here, and I'm going to open the SignalR solution in Visual Studio, where I have it open over here. And nestled away in the samples, we have a project called SignalR Load Test Harness, which my mouse is covering so you can't see it. Load Test Harness. This is just a web application that's set up so I can connect things to it. So here's what it looks like. It's a little dashboard. It's actually a little knockout application. So if you're interested in how to use SignalR with knockout, this might be an example you want to look at. And it basically has an endpoint that I can connect clients to, and then I can start broadcasting messages to them. So let's try that. I have a little link here that I can create load generators. Here's one. Here's two. Here's three. So this is just a separate page, and all it does is connect to that endpoint, and I can tell it just to send data at some interval, or it can just be passive and listen to data. So I'm going to start broadcasting at one message a second, and you know, I can't really see much at the moment because all I'm doing is looking at a page. It does tell me what the current frames per second on the server is. This tells me what actual rate of sending am I achieving. So if I get this up, that will adjust itself as the server catches up. And it's actually achieving 8 sends per second through the message bus at the moment. And I can scale that down as well in real time. So we want to get better visibility on this. I need to use performance counters. So let's go and open Perfmon. I hope you've at least heard of Perfmon, even if you haven't seen it before. So for those who didn't see what I did there, I opened Perfmon and then I clicked this button twice. Because while graphs are pretty, they're useless for looking at lots of data, and I want to look at lots of data. So click it twice to get you into report mode, so I can just see raw numbers. And then I'm going to click add, and I'm going to go to the ASP.NET counters. Let's go up here, ASP.NET applications. There's my instance there. That's my IS Express instance. And I don't want to add all of them. I really only care in a few. So let's scroll down. A lot of good stuff in here. I'm going to get requests executing of all types and WebSockets. And requests per second. I'm going to get those ones. Let's add that. Okay, so instantly I can see I have 4 requests executing right now. Everyone see that? 4 requests, and they're all WebSocket requests. Why do I have 4? Well, I have 3 load generators, and I have my dashboard, which itself is using SignalR to update itself. Okay, so I have 4 connections right now. And if I close one of these, that goes down to 3. Okay, so how did I Well, this works out of the box. ASP.NET application performance counters, I hope you've seen these before. But I'm still not getting any visibility into my traffic. To do that, I have to install some new performance counters. So I'm at a PowerShell window here, and I've gone down into microsoft.asp.net.signaler.utils/bin.debug because I've built it. But you can get this on NuGet. Here it is. Here's the package, microsoft.asp.net.signaler.utils. And inside this package, in the tools folder, it contains an exe. Yes, we're using Signaler to distribute, sorry, we're using NuGet to distribute an exe. Why not? So you pull this into your application, doesn't add any references, but you now have the exe available to you. But I'm just using the one that I built. So what does that give me? Let's run signaler.exe. It gives me a few options. I can install performance counters, I can uninstall performance counters, or I can generate those hub proxy JavaScript files. Rather than using runtime generation with that /signaler/hubs, I can do it up front. Okay, for people who are wondering how you do that. So let me install those performance counters. So that's that-ipc. Let's zoom out. Oops, not dash, just IPC. Okay, so they're installed now. That's good. I have to restart my application because we bootstrap those perf counters when you start the app. So I'm just going to close the solution and reopen it to force IIS Express to completely restart. Let's run that up again. In a tiny, tiny window. There we go. Okay, so let's come in here now, and I should see I have some new counters available. Let's come down to S. I hate this dialog. It's so hard. There we go. Signaler. And there's my instance, microsoft.asp.net.signaler.loadtestharness. These are instance counters. Let me just add all of them. Be interesting to see what we have here. Okay, so I have a bunch of counters now. Let me rearrange my screen a bit here so you can see these. Let's add some load. Just trust me, there's some load there. And if we go over here now, we've got some interesting counters. So I can see I currently have connections current of 4. So I know I have 4 connections currently. I've had 4 connect forever. So that tells me that I've had 4 connections over the life of this application. But I currently have 4. And I've only ever received 6 messages, which is kind of boring. So let's broadcast some messages now. I'm going to start my broadcasting at 1 message a second. And you can see that the receives per second has gone up to 4. So why has it gone up to 4? Well, because I'm broadcasting 1 message a second and I have 4 clients. So I have 4 messages being received by my connections per second. Does that make sense? It's just there's that fan out going on, that simple multiplication. So if I ramp that up to 10, after a moment of stabilization, what we should see is I get 30, because one of the messages per second is the dashboard message, which is always fixed at 1 a second. And then these guys are all getting at 10 a second, okay? Because that's what I've asked it to do. I can also tell these guys to actually send a message every second as well. And then what we'll see is the messages sent counter will go up. So that message is now going at 1 a second because I have 1 client sending a message 1 time a second. So this is a really good way of testing an environment or a machine, my laptop, of how many connections I can do. But obviously, it's not going to be very good if I have to start a new browser tab to generate clients. So we have a way of generating load without using browsers as well. So let's just stop this broadcast. I'm going to come back out to the command window. And over here, I've jumped into a different folder in my repo, which is Microsoft ASP.NET signaler.crank. Whoever used WCAT, the Web Capacity Analysis Tool? Good. Put out by IIS, native command line tool that lets you generate load against any web server. This is WCAT for Signaler. Okay? So I'm just going to issue a command here. This is crank. I'm not going to do 5,000. That's kind of crazy. Maybe we'll do that in a minute. I'm going to do 100 connections, okay? And we'll get rid of the batch size. I don't need that for the moment. I'm going to issue crank, tell it to connect to localhost 29 blah, 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 blah. That's my URL here. 100 clients. So that's starting up. And it's going to go ahead and create 100 connections, which is done. So if I go over to my counters now, we can see indeed I have 104 connections right now. Because I have some of those browsers still open, I have my dashboard, and I have Crank, who has connected 100 connections. So now if I start broadcasting, although Crank's probably going to finish because I only told it the default, let's do start broadcasting, we can see that number has immediately jumped up to over 1,000. Because we're now doing however many messages a second I said to 100 clients. Okay, so we get that multiplication effect. I think it was 10. So that test is finished now. It only runs for 30 seconds, and then it stops, but I can make it run further with some command line objects. So 100 is interesting, but it's not really that impressive. So we can ramp it up a little bit. I'll just wait for it to exit. And then we'll start hitting some of the limits. Now, at this point, I will say, if you're using a client Windows SKU, like I am here, this is just Windows 8, it's not Windows Server, do not use full IIS. Full IIS on Windows 8 client or Windows Server client or Windows XP only supports 10 concurrent connections. It's a hard limit. You cannot change it. IIS Express doesn't have a limit. Okay? I know there's logic in there somewhere. I just haven't found it yet. So, let's make this 1,000. So now I'm going to start 1,000 connections, 50 at a time. It's using a batching of 50. So you can see it's counting 100, 350, 400 connections, 500, et cetera, et cetera. And I've probably angered the beast now, and it's taking longer than it should. So you can, oh, because I'm broadcasting. try not to broadcast at a very high rate while you're also ramping up thousands of connections, okay? Little bit more than my little laptop here. You can see my CPU use has spiked now to, it was 100%. So now that I've stopped broadcasting, I'm getting the rest of those connections come through. Some of them had failed, okay? So I will get up to my 1,000 connections, and then I could start broadcasting at something like a more sane rate, like perhaps 1, and start broadcasting. And I should get my about 1,000 a second, which I am. And I could just start flipping that up now, and we can see that goes up to 2,000, 3,000, go up to another one, 4, so on. And now I'm at max CPU, so anything you can see here, I'm at 100% now. Anything more I do now is probably just going to cause errors. Right? Once you get to 100%, you'll start getting timeouts, tasks will get canceled, because we don't want to just clog the server, we want stuff to time out. You want failures to happen when you get to capacity, because if you don't, you just keep adding more and more load to your server and it just falls over. Okay, you need it to fail. So that's why you see stuff start to fail when it gets to load. That's good. But this tool will help you, or these two tools will help you find what the limit of your server is, which is kind of cool. Now, if you want to go really, really high, so what did I do then? I did 1,000, right? Let's wait for this to come back. And let's try something a little bit bigger. Let's try 5,000. We'll see what that does. Waiting. There it goes. Okay. Let's try 5,000. There we go. 5,000 with a batch size of 200. So I want it to start 200 at a time. Because if we did 50 at a time, we'll be here forever. All right. So 5,000 connections, 200 at a time. Now, I should be restarting the web server in between these. If I'm doing a clean perf run, you'll do all the good perf run stuff. And we can see the connection count is going up. So here's my ASP.NET requests are now at 2,200. My SignalR connections are at 2,800, 3,000. But what I expect to happen is I'm going to get to a point and things will just stop working. And I expect that point to be just before I hit 5,000, all going well. So I'm at 4,200. It's getting a bit slow. 4,400, 4,600, 4,800. Boom. Now I got exceptions. I have exceptions because by default, ASP.NET and IIS Express are configured to only support 5,000 concurrent connections. That's the default settings out of the box. Because it's a generic web server, we just try and set it to be generic by default. And 5,000 is what we consider a safe number for most people. If you want to change that, because most of the load on your web server is more like this, idle connections that aren't doing anything, all they're doing is taking up a bit of memory, then you can change these settings to have more than 5,000. We have a page up on the SignalR wiki that you can go to. So if you go up to github.com/signaler/signaler/wiki/performance, then when my network recovers from me blasting it with 5,000 SignalR connections, there is details here on the settings that you need to change to increase those numbers. So there's a couple of commands. There's a appcommand.exe blah, 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 app concurrent request limit. I set it to 100,000 in this sample. There's some ASP.NET configuration, which is how many concurrent requests per CPU. Two settings, both 5,000. You have to change both of them. And then there is a request queue limit, which is used by ASP.NET to queue requests once you hit certain limits. And you can change that limit as well. And once you've done all that, you can scale this very large. I've seen Crank drive about 150,000 to 160,000 SignalR connections on a 4-core, 8-gigabyte server, fairly recent, last couple of years. And I've seen ASP.NET, I've seen a custom client just doing WebSockets drive an ASP.NET server to 460,000, I think it was, WebSocket connections that were active. They were actually sending data every few seconds. It used a lot of RAM, okay, because that many connections has an overhead per connection. And so it was using 20 to 30 gigabytes of RAM, including some that was page. It was a VM, though. It wasn't a physical machine. It was a VM. So you can drive this number up very, very high if you want to. But I wouldn't suggest you try and get 500,000 connections running on one machine. Okay, that's not a lot of margin for error in that scenario right there. Okay. Very cool. So we have one other tool that's kind of worth mentioning, which is Signaler.stress. So Signaler.stress is more used by us to stress the core of Signaler itself. It's also evolving into our stress harness for running repeatable load tests. So Crank is great if I just want to spin up a bunch of clients against a known endpoint and have the clients be dumb. Like, the clients don't do anything. They just sit there and receive messages and throw them away. Stress is more designed for where you want scenario-driven load testing, okay? And you can either host it all in proc, so in the XE you host a Signaler server and the clients are in the XE as well, or you can use it to kick off other work. So if I just run Signaler.stress, the default profile, what it's going to do is it's going to go through a warm-up period, and if I go over to my perf counters and add, go back here and add Signaler again, and add the new instance that showed up, which is my stress here, we'll see another set of numbers. And you can see these numbers are much higher. So at the moment, I'm sending 2.2 million messages a second on this little laptop because it's just in memory. It's just a proc. It's one process, stress.exe, with how many clients? 5,000 clients. So it's 5,000 clients sitting in that one XE connected to itself, and then it's broadcasting messages as fast as it possibly can. And my CPU is saturated 100%. So the capacity of this machine to send messages in memory to 5,000 people is about 2 million or 2.2 million a second. Okay? So again, it's a good way of just measuring how good a machine is for doing Signaler type traffic. Get a baseline, and then you can compare them using something like Signaler.stress. Okay, let's flip back to the slides at this point. So all of those are available up in either our GitHub repository or in the utils NuGet package that you see there. If you install that into your project, it's a solution package, then go out to the file system, look in the packages folder, look in tools for this package name, and you'll see signaler.exe, and you can install the performance counters. You can use crank.exe by going up to GitHub and grabbing it and building it yourself. If you just type it at the command line, you do get a little bit of help that tells you what the command arguments are, which is good. Load test harness, which is in the samples folder, which you use to actually connect Crank to. Okay, it has an endpoint and a nice dashboard that lets you control what the endpoint does, broadcast or echo, that type of stuff. And stress.exe for running those isolated scenarios in proc. And then changing those IIS settings and those ASP.NET settings for when you need to get more than the defaults out of the box. 5,000 is quite a lot. Once those connections are doing something, you're going to run out of CPU pretty quick if you're sending lots of messages. If you're not sending a lot of messages, if you're doing pattern 1 or pattern 2 and your send rate is fairly low, you'll be able to get a lot more than 5,000 connections, assuming you have the memory to support it. As I said, with 8 gig of RAM on the server, we're getting about 150,000 concurrent WebSocket connections. If you have more RAM on your server, you can support more of those. Okay? So what about when one server isn't enough? When you want to scale to multiple servers. Who here is actually running a web application in a web farm behind a load balancer? Okay, that's actually quite a lot. It's like a fifth, full quarter of the room nearly. Okay. So there are a bunch of issues with scale out and technologies like Signaler. Like, we know how to scale out web traffic, traditional web traffic. It's pretty easy. You make your web app stateless, you chuck a load balancer in front of it, and then you just flip-flop between those and just spread the load out evenly. It's pretty straightforward. But when we have Signaler, we have clients to servers. So here is our clients, the purple boxes. Here's my web server that I've connected to. And now I add another one to the mix. Imagine there was a load balancer between the purple and the orange. So okay, so now I have half of my clients connected to one server and half my clients connected to another via Signaler. How do I get messages between the two? What if the message originates on the server on the left? I can send it to my, all the people connected to me, but I can't send it to everyone over there because these two servers aren't connected. Okay, so that's the first problem, message delivery. What's the second problem? Client transience. So here I have one client and two servers, and there's a load balancer in between. So the client connects to server one for one request. Maybe they're not using WebSockets. Maybe they're using service and events. And so when they do sends, they're just AJAX posts. Okay, so I do an AJAX post to server one, and an AJAX post to server two, and then an AJAX post to server one because my load balancer is doing round robin. okay, and it just goes back and forward like that. Okay, so I'm flipping from server to server. Or maybe I'm using WebSockets, and I start on server one, but then I go through a tunnel, and then I come out the other side, and I reconnect to server two. Same logical signal connection, completely different physical connection, and I'm actually on a different server now, because I got round robined to a different server. What does that mean for your app? Well, at what point was the client disconnected? We have an event in Signaler, the disconnected event, that it gets raised on the hub, which lets you clean up, lets you know when a connection goes away. Well, but we don't want to raise it when you disappeared from server one and then you reappear at server two 2 seconds later. Because you know, then you'll get a disconnect and then a connect immediately again. We want to make sure that we don't raise disconnect until you're actually gone, right? The other problem is, how do I avoid getting duplicate and missed messages as I move from server to server? If I'm serving messages from a cache on each server, which is what Signaler does, if I come to server one and get a bunch of messages, and then I flip over to server two, am I going to get the same messages again? Am I going to miss any messages that I didn't get while I was in the process of that transition? Okay? So distributed messaging computing is hard. It's client distribution. So here I have two servers. They are connected by a blue line in some magical way. We'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. And so I have a bunch of clients. All the clients on the left server care about the signal foo. They're all connected to the hub foo. And only two of the clients on the right are connected to foo, and three of them are connected to bar. Bar is really quiet, has very little traffic. But foo is really popular. Justin Bieber just came into foo. Right? So all the bee believers are in there, believers are in there. And now I have a lot of trouble, right? Because my load balancer didn't know that foo was busy. It's a Signaler thing. Like, how would it know? It just put a whole bunch of people randomly on server one, and now I have too much traffic on server one because I don't have smart load balancing. With web traffic, it's kind of easy. It's a web request. Like, who cares? Just give it to any server. You can basically assume that the load that web request is going to create is going to be roughly the same per one. That's not always true, obviously, but that's how most load balancing is set up. In this scenario, though, this can be a real problem. I could end up very easily just having one server get pummeled because it happened to end up with all the people and all the traffic. So we have some solutions for this. First of all, we have plug-in scale-out providers. We've talked about this before. We support, if I go back, this blue line in between here, we have a way of plugging that into your application. So we support SQL Server, Redis, and Windows Azure Service Bus. It's really easy to set up. Okay, I'll show you in a second. It's a NuGet package and one line. But because it's so easy, it does have some limitations. It's great for the first pattern, that server broadcast pattern, where when you send one message on the bus, it goes to a lot of people, and you only ever send at a low rate. You know, low rates of messages over the backplane or over the message bus. A few a second, maybe tens a second, maybe even a couple hundred a second is okay. Anything more than that, and you're going to run into problems because, A, the messages aren't being stored in memory anymore. They're going off to some other completely different thing, so that's a lot of latency. And B, I've forgotten my point for what B was. I'll remember it in a minute. it's limited for others. Oh, because I've written it right there. Because you're going to be limited by how fast any one web node can pull off the backplane. Okay? Backplanes are much, much slower than single server throughput. Much slower. Throughput does not equal scale. You can get incredible fast message rates through a single server with Signaler, and then you plug in one of these providers, it does not scale linearly at all. Okay, this is about scaling out in order to get more clients, more concurrency. It's not about getting more messages per second. Okay, so how does it look like? This is the architecture of our scale-out model that you can plug into. We have our three web servers, and we have a bunch of clients connected to each. Then I add a backplane to this architecture. And we have multiple connections to the backplane per web node. We shard messages across those streams, those connections, which lets us get more throughput on the backplane, depending on what the backplane technology is. In SQL Server, those streams are represented by tables, because the locking unit is a table in SQL Server, so we can shard messages across tables, and in theory, we might be able to get better throughput. In Service Bus, the streams are topics. Anyone use Service Bus? Yep, so a topic is their pub-sub mechanism. Topics have an inherent throughput limit because of the way their broker works, but you can shard messages across topics so you can get more throughput. Okay, so we do that. So then a message starts down here at a client. Maybe it's a chat app. It goes up to the node that client is connected to. That node then sends it immediately to the backplane. This is critical. It doesn't shortcut deliver it to the clients connected to itself. It goes to the backplane. The backplane is authoritative. The backplane then does what it does. It replicates the message, sends it down to the connected web nodes by one of those streams, and then delivers that message off to the clients that are connected. Okay? That's how the very basic scale-out architecture works. So let's have a look at what I would need to do to set that up in my application. Okay, I'm going to come back and I'm going to open a different project here, one I created earlier. I think this is the right one. So this is just a very, very simple chat app. Let me run this up so you can see it. I'll tear that out and close that one down. Let me close down my that. Okay. So it's chat. Here it is. Chrome, test, send. Great. Very good. Works just like I would expect. But what happens if I scale this out? So let's do that. Let's go to the command line. What I'm going to do is I'm going to fire up two instances of this application on two different ports of IIS Express. So I'm just going out to the command line to run IIS Express and tell it to start up an instance of IIS Express at that folder. So there's one. That one's running at 8080. So let me change this port here to 8080. There it goes. Make sure that works. Very good. Let me open IE now. I'm going to come back down here and start a separate instance. And this time I'm going to start it on 8081. So let's paste that in here. Oops, paste the right thing. 8081. Okay, so let's pin that there. Pin that there. So this is from IE. Two instances, two completely different servers, okay? And this one's from Chrome. So as you would expect, they can't see each other messages, okay? There's one server on one port and one server on another. Your application is running twice. This is what happens in a web farm. Your application runs on multiple servers. Just imagine I've been load balanced here. So how can I change this application so this works? Well, it's very, very easy. Let's go to NuGet. Let's find microsoft.asp.net.signaler.redis. I'm going to use Redis here. Redis is an open source, not installed packages, online packages, is an open source message bus system that there is a Windows port of that was actually built by Microsoft OpenTech. Another great example of Microsoft doing open source. It's very popular in the Linux community, very popular in non-.NET web architectures, and becoming more popular in .NET scenarios. But you could use SQL Server here. We have support for that. Or you could use, if you're in Windows Azure, you should be using Service Bus. But I'm running locally, so I'm just going to use Redis. So then I'm going to come out back to here, and I'm going to start up an instance of Redis. And I have lost that command prompt, so let me go and do that. So I have cloned Redis from GitHub. Let me go ahead and... So I just cloned it here. I've built it in Visual Studio. It's just C++. I'm going to go into my folder here, and I'm going to start an instance of Redis. It's in my debug folder. I'm going to say redis-server. So now Redis is running. Okay, there it is. Redis is running, and it's running on port 6379. So I've installed the Redis package. Let me come up to my app start over here. And before I call map hubs, which starts the signaler world, I'm going to say globalhost.dependencyresolver.useRedis. And into here, I'm going to pass an address, localhost. I'm going to pass a port. What was it? 63-something-something. 6379. I don't need a password. I'm just going to give it an event key of build. This is just the Redis event key that you want to use to segregate this traffic from other Redis traffic. Okay? That's it. It's built. So I rebuilt it. Let me go and restart these servers. I hit Q to finish it. Q to finish it here. Stopping my IIS Express. Let's run it again. That one's running. That one's running. Let me refresh these pages. Okay, so now if I say from Chrome over here and hit send, I get it in both sides. So from IE over here, I get it on both sides. So it's really easy, really, really easy, but it is limited. I'm being totally upfront, it's very limited. Okay, works for these type of scenarios, for low traffic, but once you get a little bit more complicated, it gets a little bit more complicated. But we'll talk about that. So there are some custom patterns that you can use. So custom scale out. Let's look at some different ways you could do this without using our scale-out providers. If they don't work for you, if you have bigger scale needs than they can address. Common server. This is great for document collaboration or whiteboarding, where you have a small group of people who are working on the same collaboration unit, the same subject, okay? The same document or the same whiteboard. The application knows which server, they're not load balanced, which server is currently serving which document. Okay? It's very much like a real-time gaming lobby where you connect to the lobby, you create a game, you wait for people to start, and then they all put you onto the same game server. Okay? It's almost identical to that. You can use groups in SignalR to segregate the traffic, so you can have multiple whiteboards on one server, just put them in different groups. And obviously, you would persist all actual state, so if you make document changes, you would save that out to your application's database or whatever. And you can scale this up pretty well. You can get to the point of having a dedicated server per scale unit, like per whiteboard or per chat room or whatever it is that you want to do to farm people. So what would that look like? So here's server affinity. I got my client server 1 and server 2. The client says, I want to work on document foo. And it gets load balanced to server 1 or it just connects to server 1. And server 1 says, sure, that's currently happening over on server 2. And so it tells the server to create a SignalR connection on server 2. And it goes, okay, connect. I want to connect for document foo. Now I have a connection. Another client has gone through the same process, and we can both work on document foo, because the real-timeness of document foo is living on server 2. Okay? So that's the first example. Second example, custom scale-out, specific server. This is good for the server push scenario, where you're sending unique payloads to each client. Okay? You connect the client to a specific server, and then you save in your application state what server each client is on. So you know that Damien is on SignalR connection 123 on server 6. You save that into your database. And then when someone says, I want to send a message to Damien, or your app wants to broadcast me a message, you look up my connection ID and my server, and then you post a message to that server via some endpoint, web API, MVC, whatever you like, and then on that server you internally do a local push like this. So client comes along, says, I want to connect. And goes, sure, go over and connect on server 2. So I connect on server 2, and once I've connected, I save that state out to my database. Client number 1 is currently connected on server 2. Great, now my app knows. Now a message originates for client number 1, but it's on server 1. Like, okay, or it could be a completely different source. Maybe it's a worker role or a Windows service, and you want to push it from the back end, okay? The message comes from somewhere. So it looks up, well, where is client number 1 at the moment? Asks the database. The database says, well, client number 1 is over on server 2. So it goes, okay, let me send that message to server 2. And that endpoint is not SignalR. That last step, that is not SignalR. That's just a web API. Just post to it. Okay, you don't need to use SignalR server to server, because you can just post to a server. It's really easy. Okay, it'll scale much better. And then from there, the server just does a local broadcast or a local delivery to that client. It's just all in memory, and then it goes straight down to that client. Okay? This is the technique that things like document collaboration servers tend to use if they don't use the first one, or if you're using that kind of that idea of a unique stock ticker. This one works well. And this can scale really well, because you can have a bank of real-time web servers, like servers that just do SignalR traffic, and you can have lots of them. And you can just keep adding more of them. And this scales really well, because you're just sending messages directly to the servers that need them. Okay? You're not sending them to everybody and then just hoping that someone wants them. Okay. Third one, filtered message bus. This is good for the server push scenario, again, where you have unique payloads. A lot more complicated. You need a lot more infrastructure. The web servers connect to a backplane that supports the idea of filtered subscriptions. And then when a connection connects to it, you update that filter so that the server only gets messages that are required for that. For the clients currently connected to it. Looks like this. 3 servers. I have a person down the bottom left who cares about foo and a person on the bottom right. So the first server and the last server care about foo, but the one in the middle doesn't. No one's listening for foo. So a message comes in for foo. I push it to the backplane. The backplane only sends it to the servers that have clients that care about foo. So now I don't have that problem of every server getting every single message, and that's limiting my scale. And now I just deliver that internally. Okay? A little bit more complicated to set up, admittedly. A lot more complicated. But this would scale very well, too, if you have a very powerful backplane technology. Last one, server transition. This is great for real-time gaming. This is just when you can't afford to send messages over the wire in the back because it's just too expensive, just too many of them. This is when you're doing that 25 hertz, okay, and you're sending lots and lots and lots of those messages. what you would do is you create an in-game experience, like a hyperspace to another quadrant. So you get to the end of the range of the current server in your game, and then you create an in-game experience. Oh, I'm going to hyperspace you off to Galaxy F. And then while you do that, what your code is doing is killing that signaler connection and reconnecting it to a different server where everyone in Galaxy F is. Okay? You get very good performance because it's single box equivalency. There's no messages going around a backplane. It's just all within one server to its clients. It's very good. But you can't send messages between clients on different servers unless you create that yourself, because the clients aren't connected to each other if they're on different servers. Okay? Or you can do a hybrid. Mix and match them. Okay? Do something like the real-time one I just spoke about, and then also have a scaled-out one just for in-app alerts, stuff that isn't as high rate, for instance. Maybe run two signaler connections from the client. Or maybe do the document server affinity one, but instead of each document being on a single server, have each document go to a cluster of three or four servers that are configured to use that scale-out, plug-in scale-out model. So now you have a farm of farms. Okay? More complicated, but able to handle a lot more scale. So I'll finish up by saying we're working on providing better guidance on this. This is our first attempt at giving you guidance and theoretical information and some tools to help you do this type of scaling work in Signaler. We're going to work on samples for all the patterns that I just talked about. So you'll actually be able to download a functioning sample and have a look at the type of code you'll be able to you'd have to write to do it, okay? So watch this space. For 2.0, we are making some improvements. First of all, use 1.1 if you're not, because we made a bunch of performance improvements in 1.1, much faster than 1.0. In 2.0, we're going to support pre-serialization of messages. So if you have messages that have already been JSON serialized, you can just give us those messages as bytes, and we won't reserialize them, okay? Saves a lot of compute. We'll also support doing a single set of serialization if you want to send the same message to multiple signals. If you want to send a message to foo and bar, today, you have to send it to foo and then send it to bar, and we reserialize it twice. Okay? So we're going to support just doing the one set of serialization, which will save compute as well. Here's a bunch of resources. ASP.NET Signal I showed you. A free ebook. Fantastic. That second link, grab it. It's a PDF. Print it. It's an 80-page book, a fantastic introduction to SignalR. The GitHub repository and my Twitter handle. Please fill in your evals. I hope you have a great build. Thanks for coming along.